Joining me is Jared Carabas. Jared, it's 2:42 a.m. We just got back to our respective apartments from WrestleMania 35. We just got back. Just got back.
What a nightmare. This is an absolute nightmare, Bob. This is we're doing from the top rope here at 3 o'clock in the morning. I have to be up in a few hours to do Section 10, followed by Starting 9, followed by CCK. This is my nightmare, Bob. And you know what else is my nightmare? The finish to that WrestleMania. But we'll also we'll get to that in a little bit.
Well, we will get to the finish of WrestleMania in just a bit. Finding an Uber at a MetLife Stadium was the most difficult thing I've ever endured. And we actually never wound up finding an Uber. We left. The main event was what it was. We'll talk about it in a bit. We waited in this adult playpen full of thousands of human beings waiting to get Ubers. I got a notification popped up on my Uber, said, sorry, all Ubers are busy right now, try again later. I didn't even know they made that notification. I had no idea. That's never popped up in my Uber feed. We waited around. We had like five Ubers cancel on us. The price kept increasing to $100-something per Uber. My credit card got declined in the middle of it. You got the bright idea. Let's just walk as far away from MetLife Stadium as we possibly can walk as it started raining. We did that. A cab arose from the heavens. We got in that cab. Jared, that cab was $134 back to the city. It dropped us off by the Port Authority. We both had to grab other cabs to our apartments. What a fucking train wreck that was.
I mean, it was insane that, I mean, our Uber driver was like, yeah, they're not letting Ubers into the designated Uber area. So I was like, oh, so we were just standing here for 2 hours for no fucking reason. Like, that's, whew. Sheesh. But that's not what the folks are listening for. That's not
They're
what
not.
The grapple fucks tuned in for to hear us complain about traveling. They want to hear about the graps, Bob. They want to hear about WrestleMania.
And they should want to hear about the graps, because I will say, before we get into this match by match, I enjoyed myself a lot at WrestleMania 35. I thought it was a very fun show. Our first WrestleMania together, great moment. The grapple fucks finally make it to WrestleMania, and there were a ton of grapple fucks at WrestleMania. If you came up to us, thanks. If you missed us, sorry. We met a lot of you. It was fun. A really fun time. So we get in right after the cruiserweight match. So we missed that. We were getting food as that was going on. We saw the Women's Battle Royal for the uterus-shaped trophy.
Yep.
That was fine. Carmella won. She pulled the old, you know, duck out of the ring, let the Battle Royal go on, wait till there's one person. Yeah, it was a fine choice. We originally thought it was going to be Sarah Logan, which would have been a bit of a bizarre choice, unless they were...
I didn't think that. I would have hated that. I would have hated that.
Okay. They didn't go with Sarah Logan. I wish they would have went with Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan was my pick for the Royal Rumble.
She follows you on Twitter, Bob. It should. You know who it should have been?
Who?
It should have been Alexa Bliss, but she's been hurt. She was the host of the show.
Did you know who you were going to say when you said, do you know who it should have been? It sounded like you were like, I have no idea who I'm about to say.
No, it should have been Alexa Bliss. She was physically unable to compete, but did a fine job hosting the show, Bob.
She did do a fine job hosting the show.
I forget what the segment was, but she was wearing a dress and whoo! I will be going back to watch that.
Oh, Jared's talking about jerking off, folks.
That's right, brother.
Right after the Women's Battle Royal, we actually got, looking back, this was actually one of the cooler moments of the whole show, Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder versus The Revival. The streak is finally broken. Curt Hawkins has won a match. This was a great match with a great payoff. One of the best like pre-show matches in a while, where you came out of the pre-show thinking, man, that was really worth something.
That match set the tone for the rest of the night, at least for me on a personal perspective. I was like, this is going to be fun. Like, someone tweeted at me and they were like, this is arguably the most feel-good WrestleMania of all time. And obviously it's because of, like, the Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, and Kofi Kingston wins. But, I mean, it kind of all started with Curt Hawkins getting a dub, and it happening at WrestleMania, and it being for a championship. Like, that was the first. I mean, obviously, no one's going to include Curt Hawkins when you talk about the feel good victories of the night. But I mean, that was.
But you should.
You definitely should.
You should. It was awesome. If you missed that, if you didn't watch the pre-show, I would like say it's worth going back for. The moment itself, the moment where he gets the pin over one of the Revival guys, that was great. I wonder if the Revival was originally supposed to lose that match, or if they're like, hey, Dash, don't punch a guy on his way out as he after he attacks Bret Hart. Who knows? Yeah. After that, we got the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which stunk. Braun eliminated the SNL guys last.
I don't think it stunk. It was just like there were no surprises. There were no swerves. It was just like, yeah, I mean, if there were an actual battle royal between these WWE superstars, Braun Strowman would be the guy who would win if it was real life. And he won. So, but he should win. Like, it's not like he's not deserving. It's just, the only thing that I didn't like about it was the fact that Braun didn't have a fucking singles match at WrestleMania. Like, Baron Corbin had a singles match at WrestleMania, but Braun Strowman can't. But if there's going to be an Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, like, that should be one of the things that Braun Strowman accomplishes in his career at some point. So I guess if you don't have anything for him at WrestleMania, then put him in it and have him win. But I feel like this isn't even an opinion. Braun Strowman right now is in the best shape of his life.
Oh, my God,
like
yeah.
He is a physical specimen. We knew that before when he debuted. He was never fat. It's just like he had a little bit more weight on him. But now it was before he was lifting like a power lifter. Now he's lifting like a bodybuilder. So he looks phenomenal. I think he if you were to present Braun Strowman with, do you want to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal or have a singles match at WrestleMania? I'm sure he'd pick the singles match. So, but again, something that belongs on his resume.
I agree with that. I think it's cool that a lot of the WWE's giants have that Andre the Giant Battle Royal accolade. I would have preferred a singles match, obviously. I also would have just preferred if we got the SNL guys out of there. The Colin Jost wearing an Odell Beckham jersey, good troll, but I'm just never a fan of the celebrity involvement, like the forced celebrity involvement into WrestleMania. It very rarely hits its mark for me.
Yeah, well, just in wrestling in general, like the Jon Stewart interference at SummerSlam.
The worst. I saw a gif of that today, and it like put disgust through my fucking whole mindset, because I was like, man, I know it's WrestleMania Day, but that would have been a 5-star match if it had a regular finish.
The best celebrity involvement in WWE history belongs to?
You're going to say Pete Rose, yeah?
I have two in mind. Pete Rose is one of them.
See, on a personal level, I like Hugh Jackman hosting Raw, which is a weird thing, but he's Wolverine for me, so him hosting Raw and getting to like team up with Zack Ryder, I thought that was cool. I'm sure I'm forgetting a massive one. Stephen Amell was always good whenever he came in.
The answer is Drew Carey. Move on.
Oh, Drew Carey is a great one. Okay, now we start the official show. Alexa Bliss comes out as the host of WrestleMania, looking phenomenal. And she says, all it takes to have a WrestleMania moment is for me to snap my fingers. So, and she snaps her finger, and it fucking comes crashing down, and it hurts inside, Jared. Hulk Hogan comes out. Huge start to the night. Huge. Yeah. He cuts a great promo. He said, happy to be back here in the Silverdome playing off his WrestleMania 30 promo. And then he says, I'm just kidding around, brothers. I'm here at the MetLife Center, which is actually not the name of the stadium. It's MetLife Stadium. We're going to let that one slide because that's just the Hulkster being the Hulkster.
Yeah.
As they're celebrating, Alexa Bliss and the Hulkster are making poses on the top of the ramp. Paul Heyman struts his little walrus ass down to the ring and says, if my client Brock Lesnar is not in the main event of WrestleMania, we're not wasting our time. We're getting this over with right now, and we're getting back on a plane to Las Vegas where my client gets the respect that he deserves. Brock Lesnar comes out, and right away we're like, holy shit, we're doing this right now. Right here, right now, Universal title match.
Right call.
Oh, it was definitely the right call, I think, because I loved the way they structured the whole match. So Seth Rollins comes out afterwards, has kind of a cool Beast Slayer Titantron. They do a beatdown where Brock attacks him during the entrance, really takes it to him for, I don't know, 5 minutes out on the outside, maybe more, throws him through some announce table shit. They finally get in the ring, they start the match. Brock hits a few suplexes, gets pushed into the referee, And then Seth hits a low blow, three curb stomps, match over, new Universal Champion. Great WrestleMania moment to start off the show. And honestly, it was cool seeing this sort of Brock match because it didn't follow the general structure of his. You know, it wasn't a squash and someone goes over. It wasn't the Goldberg-type sprint. It was somewhere in the middle, and it was fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it was a fun match, and it kind of made me a little nervous when you see because I think when we talked about like our preview of WrestleMania, I was like, okay, so you have these three matches where Kofi absolutely has to go over and Becky absolutely has to go over. And I ranked them to be like, all right, well, if there's one match where the guy that absolutely should go over will not go over, it would be this one. So yeah. I was like, wait a second. All right. So if Seth Rollins just went over Brock, does that mean that we're kind of iffy about Kofi and Becky later on in the night? I don't know. So
you did get nervous.
I did, because I was like, there's no way, like, you know, I would say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have been way more nervous.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah.
But now they're like listening to the fans,
which is maybe a crock of shit, but
yeah, because Jinder wasn't in the main event. But I think if there was a moment where I was like, fuck, I don't know. I think the swerve would have came not, there's no chance, 0% chance Kofi wasn't going over. I said, going into the main event, I looked at you and I was like, I got a weird feeling about this main event here with Becky. I don't know if they're going to put her over. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
it was a feel good mania, and the feel goodness continued with AJ Styles versus Randy Orton. It was the matchup next. And it was actually a very good match. Kind of flew under the radar, probably. I don't know. We haven't really been on Twitter tonight because it's 3 a.m., as you just said. But it was a really well-structured match, two pros. They did a few really cool, like, looks like he's going to get hit with the RKO, doesn't. He actually got hit with the RKO, AJ Styles, kind of out of nowhere. Kicked out. They did a few finisher kickouts, a few cool like submission transitions. I enjoyed the match throughout. Not much else to say about it, though.
Nope.
Up next, we had the Usos versus Aleister Black and Ricochet versus Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura versus The Bar in a fatal four-way tag team match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Another one where I feel like the match was good. There's not much to say about it other than that. I would have preferred just the Usos versus Aleister and Ricochet. I get that you got to put everyone on the card, but it seemed like every time any combination of those two teams were in the ring, the crowd was into it. It was really exciting. It was really good. And I would have just preferred them to get more one-on-one time with each other. Mm-hmm. Whereas this match, I'm looking at the card right now, this match got 10 minutes, 10 seconds. I would have preferred that all to be allocated towards the Usos and Aleister Black versus Ricochet. But the match wasn't bad by any means.
Yeah, no, it was a good match, but with the Usos going over, I feel like, I don't want to say have the Usos as heels run its course, because I remember when they were having those matches with the New Day, I was like, I don't give a fuck if this goes to like a six-part series. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, I would love to watch these guys just keep going at it. But the Usos as heels, way better as baby faces, but it's like, what more is there for them to do at this point?
That's a good point. And Aleister Black and Ricochet, a win here would have elevated them to such a huge level, especially someone like Ricochet. If you let him hit the 630 and pick up the win, I'm sure
like
a lot of casual fans.
The only match of the night where the titles were retained.
Was it? It might have been.
Yeah. I
mean, Samoa Joe retained his title, actually. I think those were the only two.
Samoa Joe was what, the U.S. champion?
Yeah.
And that was it.
I'm looking at the card right now. That was it. So I guess to your point, you can't have every championship change hands on WrestleMania, especially now that there's so many championships. Mm. Next on the card, we had Shane McMahon defeating The Miz in a Falls Count Anywhere match. A good gimmicky match for WrestleMania. Maybe went on a little longer than it should have. When you get a Falls Count Anywhere match...
I thought it was appropriately timed, because you can't just rush to a spot like what the finish was. I think like the slow build, because
that's true.
I think both of us were doing the same thing. Once it was Falls Count Anywhere, and the match started, I just started looking around the arena to be like, where are they going to fall off of?
Yeah. Yeah, we did do the same thing, especially with Shane. If it's false count anywhere, you start doing that anyway. When it's Shane, you're like, okay, where's the big table setup that they have? For me, the only thing was once, and it's kind of an issue of the stipulation, not even the match itself. When you have a false count anywhere match, especially in a stadium and not an arena, and they start fighting in the crowd, as someone in the crowd, it's always hard to follow along with. So I'm sure at home it was better than it was in the arena. I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was anything special. The final spot was cool. I didn't love Shane McMahon going over for whatever reason, but it was such a babyface-heavy WrestleMania. Got to put some heels over. The Miz's dad spot was funny, and the Miz's dad being one of my favorite memes of the night is great, so we got that out of it.
Yeah, he was an instant meme. But Shane going over, it's like, did he?
They did the won the battle, lost the war.
Yeah. I had no problem with the finish. I thought it was a clever way to not snuff out, because I thought that was super cool when Miz's entrance first happened. I think I turned and looked at you and I was like, I think that this is awesome that Miz is finally getting his due, because he's an awesome heel, but he's been a heel forever. And when you're a permanent heel, you don't really get your due. Like, you're not going to get the appreciation that you deserve for putting on awesome, consistent matches for over a decade.
And he's also not the kind of guy that has ever tried to play the cool heel.
No.
He's always tried to, how can I get the most boos out of the fans possible? So he does the cheap heat stuff. He does some cheap tactics and what have you. So I'm with you. Him getting his due is awesome. And seeing Shane O'Mac back in that heel role and the whole thing he pulled with the entrance where he made them repeat the entrance over and over and over again.
Loved it.
So great. Like Shane McMahon, him and Daniel Bryan, a tag team from last year's WrestleMania, two of the most beloved baby faces on last year's card, both were able to pull massive boos out of the crowd. And that is, you know, says something about how great they are as performers. Up next, this one was near and dear to your heart, Jared.
Oh, yeah.
The Iconics defeated the Boss and Hug Connection, Nia Jax and Tamina, the Botch Squad.
Again.
And the Divas of Doom. What? The Divas of Doom. Beth Phoenix and Natalya, has that always been their tag team name? I have
never
no idea.
That
that's the first time I've ever read that. The Divas of Doom. Bret Hart walked them out to the ring after getting attacked at the Hall of Fame. I guess we could touch on that very briefly. That was fucked up. Some maniac attacked Bret Hart at the Hall of Fame.
And by maniac, it's not even just like, oh, you know, who would be crazy enough to attack Bret Hart? No. This guy, if you go look at his Twitter account, is an actual insane person.
Yeah, if you dig around, you could find it. I forget what it was, but we found that he's a psychopath. He wears, like, Joker face paint and has been tweeting incessantly at Vince McMahon and Triple H that women should not be in the main event of WrestleMania and, like, he would do something about it. Apparently, tackling Bret Hart at the Hall of Fame was his plan to do something about it. But Bret Hart comes out, huge pop from the crowd. It was nice seeing him. Good. We're all happy that he's safe. He's good. This match was fine. It was another shorter one. It's 10 minutes. Nia Jax and Tamina, no major botches from them that we could tell, at least.
They kind of, like, didn't give them the opportunity to. There was a point in the match where they both got up on the top rope. And it was foiled. The plan was foiled. But
the plan was foiled.
The logic made no sense because I don't know who knocked Nia off the top rope, but because Nia got knocked off the turnbuckle, Tamina just kind of got down.
She probably could have, you know, in kayfabe, hit a splash and a pinfall and been the women's champions right now, but she didn't do that.
She was like, oh, Nia's not doing it? All right, then I'm not doing it.
Okay. Yeah. And finally, the finish of the match.
I thought you were just going to move on to the next fucking match.
I thought it was hitting the main event there. No, the finish of the match was Beth Phoenix hitting a glam slam, like an avalanche glam slam, off the top rope to Bayley. Both of the Iconics rushing into the ring, super heel move, throwing Beth Phoenix out of the ring and just pinning Bayley for themselves. You were on cloud nine.
I was on cloud nine. I remember the first time that I saw the Iconics. This had to have been the summer of 20, 16, but it was at the Lowell Arena there that you went to for what, Ring of Honor?
Yeah, I went there for when Cody won the Ring of Honor title over Christopher Daniels.
Yeah, so I think, like, if you're a diehard wrestling fan, it is really cool to see NXT when they do travel, because it's basically like the minor leagues. It's like you go down to the minor leagues and you get to watch, you know, like the blue chip prospects of your favorite team, and then they come up through the system and it's like, hey, I saw him way back then. And like that's basically what the connection that I had to them. I was like, oh, they're gonna be fucking, you could tell back then, like, they're gonna be something. And then, you know, you fast forward 2-3 years later, here they are winning the women's tag titles at WrestleMania, the first ever women to win the women's tag team titles at a WrestleMania. So yeah, yep. it was a really cool moment.
Huge pop from the crowd too. The crowd was very into that finish.
Yeah.
Now, I think at this point, the guy in front of us, nice enough guy, turns around and he says,
oh God,
did you hear the rumor about the Undertaker? And the two of us say, you know what? No, we didn't hear the rumor about the Undertaker. And he said, apparently he's going to come out interrupting Elias, and then Sting's going to come out, challenge him to a match at Crown Jewel. That was what he told us.
Yeah.
In some world, and as soon as he was saying it, I was like, I wanted to be like, that's bullshit coming out of your mouth right now. This is a rumor that you made up, and you're trying to will it into existence right now.
Not even. I think he was trying to, like,
the
make
fuck
it
would
like
Elias be doing in the ring with Sting and Undertaker just being like, this
and
is awkward.
Why they have that match? I mean, we've been talking about, I remember I used to, like, watch, I don't even know, it was probably, like, 2006, 2007, there was, like, a mashup on YouTube of, like, Undertaker clips and Sting clips. Like, we've been talking for well over a decade. Like,
and the opportunity to do it was when you brought Sting in to face Triple H at 31.
Not even. I mean, like,
no, that was when you, if there was any realistic time to put it together, you had to do it then, because you could have played the angle of Sting being like, hey, Taker, I know the streak's over, but there's one last thing that you haven't done. Face me at WrestleMania. Like, the fact that they did Sting versus Triple H and Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt was so dumb. That was just dumb. But they're not going to do it now. They're just not going to do it now.
They're not going to do it now, but why didn't they do it then? I don't understand that. Like, that someone, like, one of the two had to have not wanted to do it. Like, that's just the most obvious choice. Sting comes to WWE, you have a match with The Undertaker immediately. Or if it's not the first year, then you use that first match to set up Undertaker the year after. And they didn't do that either.
Yeah. One of the all-time, like, bad decisions of just not making that match.
I think that their fear was probably that, you know, like, that is the dream match of all time. It's like Sting and The Undertaker number one, CM Punk, Stone Cold Steve Austin, somewhere up there. But I mean,
Rock and Michaels will always be up there.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a fake poster the year after Undertaker retires Shawn Michaels at 26. A fake poster that was like Sting and The Undertaker at 27 on like NoDQ.com, like leaked poster, I don't know, something crazy. But like you said, we've been talking about that forever. The guy in front of us wound up not being right. Spoiler alert for the rest of this podcast.
Crazy.
We did not get The Undertaker versus Sting or a confrontation between the two. And speaking of people in our section, the ace, Hiroshi Tanahashi, was sitting like one row behind us, like a little down the aisle. And this is going back a little earlier in the night, but we like sat down and we were in a family and friends type section for the WWE. And I'm like kind of looking around. I see like Dominic, I see Rey Mysterio-san, I see Zack Ryder's dad. And I'm like trying to just see like who I recognize. And I look down, I'm like, oh my God, that's Tanahashi. And I turned to you. I was like, I gotta go take a picture, right?
Mm.
And I ran up. And I, like, tapped him on the shoulder, and I was like, excuse me, Mr. Tanahashi, I'm a huge fan. Can I take a picture? And he was just like, yeah, it's fine. He threw up the pose. I was on cloud nine. The night could have ended then, and I would have been like, I'm all good. I just met Tanahashi at WrestleMania. Like, what a weird sentence. Up next on the card, though, this is the match that I am the most excited to talk about, and I think it's the match that you're the most excited to talk about.
Sure am.
Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston. for the WWE Championship. Jared, we had such high hopes going into this match. We had such
the
high
highest,
hopes.
The highest. When is the last time that you had such high expectations for a match and then it just met your expectations, possibly exceeded them?
Fuck, I don't know. I don't know, because as we discussed last week, the two of us kind of fell out on wrestling for a little bit. I'm sure it was something in NXT. You know, NXT always delivers, but main card talking. This match delivered on every level. It was so friggin' good throughout. The crowd was so hot. This is the hottest the crowd was all night by a long shot. Mm-hmm. Going wild. Kofi, Kofi, doing the Kofi rocks. New Day was perfect ringside. They reminded me a little bit of... That was another one. They reminded me a little bit of how the Young Bucks treat Kenny Omega matches. Like, they didn't really interfere or do anything where, like, it was match-changing. They hit the, like, New Day finish, tag team finisher on Eric Rowan after he interfered, which is fine. But they just came off as, like, the two most supportive managers of all time. Daniel Bryan put on a heel masterclass. Kofi Kingston put on an underdog masterclass. And just all of the stars aligned, finally culminating in this big, grandiose finish where Daniel Bryan hits the running knee, Kofi Kingston kicks out. They do kind of a Hulk-up moment with Kofi Kingston in the middle of the match where he's getting fired up. The whole crowd's getting fired up behind him. They do the yeah, boo spot, which the crowd adapted into a yes, no spot. Daniel Bryan started doing the yes chant, and the crowd was, you know, knowing along to it. Finally, Kofi Kingston hits a Trouble in Paradise, gets the 1-2-3. He's presented with the actual WWE title, not the new Daniel Bryan WWE title, by his brothers in the New Day. Everyone's crying. It was an emotional moment, a heartfelt moment, a genuine moment. The celebration I tweeted was pretty much as good as the match. It was just such a good, a feel-good moment.
Yeah, and you can vouch for me here. This was my hot take that didn't that. This was my hot take that went on to not be so hot by the end of the night. But I said, Kofi, Daniel Bryan should have been the main event. That should have been the end of the show. Maybe, but it's kind of like a butterfly effect. It's like, all right, so if that's the main event, is the crowd, you know, the crowd was exhausted by the end of the night.
So exhausted.
Seven fucking plus hour show.
The main event started at midnight.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, that can't happen again.
Does the crowd react the same way if that match is further down on the card? I don't know.
If you swapped the main event and Bryan and Kofi, does Becky get Kofi's reaction and Kofi gets Becky's reaction?
No, because the finish to that match, which we'll get to, was a fucking flop. But
I'm with you. We discussed this a little bit while we were waiting for our Uber, but I still think on paper, even with hindsight being 2020, on paper, I still think Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte deserve to main event.
No, they didn't. Well, I don't know. It's like, all right, so
I thought that match had the most behind it, a storyline starting in early November.
But Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston storyline, albeit not as drawn out, like it wasn't existing for as long as the Ronda Becky one, and it didn't sort of spill over into social media like that one did. I think the story there and the payoff, because it's like, okay, it's not about a Kofi Daniel Bryan feud. It's about a career and a legacy being fulfilled. So it's really an 11-year story versus however long
true.
He's been feuding with Daniel Bryan for. That's why I think, you know, nothing against Charlotte, Becky, Ronda. That match had all the potential in the world. But I just feel like they main evented because, like, the women's revolution started a couple of years ago, and it's like, all right, they keep trying to top it. It's like, all right, so we do a Hell in a Cell match, and we do a Money in the Bank match. It's like, how do we keep topping it? Like, the first this, the first that, the first this, the first that. Then they just kind of get to like, oh, well, we got to do the first ever women's WrestleMania main event. Like, that's how we top it. And it's like,
me, it felt like the time was right to do that. It did.
It. But again, like, the fucking Kofi Daniel Bryan match came out of nowhere. So maybe that main event was talked about before this Kofi thing came together. I don't know.
Oh, it definitely was. Yeah, I know that for a fact it was.
Yeah, it's almost like they promised them the spot without even really knowing what the fuck was going on. But yeah, it's not the wrong decision. It just, looking at it now, the most emotional response that you got from that crowd was Kofi and Daniel Bryan, which says to me that should have ended the show. Like, you have Kofi going over 11 years, WWE champion, New Day in the ring.
I was going to say, not even that. It is a culmination of the New Day story. Looking back on so many interviews with Big E and Xavier Woods, when people say, what is your biggest goal in the WWE? Their answer is always being by Kofi's side and somehow being a part of him winning a WWE championship. To see them in the ring with him, they brought Kofi Kingston's kids in the ring. It was such like a crazy emotional WrestleMania moment. It'll definitely be, when we look back at WrestleMania 35, that will be the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, of course.
Undoubtedly.
Like, when they show video packages of WrestleMania history, that'll be in there. Like, that's an all-time WrestleMania moment, and I'm sorry, but there weren't any all-time WrestleMania moments in that women's main event. There just weren't. Like, you might have like a video of Becky Lynch holding up the two titles with the pyro going off in the back, yeah, but like that's just not like Kofi and Daniel Bryan should have went on last.
I really enjoyed this match. It lived up to all of the hype that I had for it. My guy Daniel Bryan came up on the losing end, but I guarantee you he feels very, very satisfied with what they did in the ring. After this, I really came down from my high when Samoa Joe choked the life out of Rey Mysterio in 2 seconds. So I'm sorry if I'm fumbling my words, folks, by the way. It's 3:14 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's just how it's going to be. But Rey Mysterio comes out finally dressed as Mysterio himself, a Spider-Man villain that will be in the upcoming Far From Home. I really thought he was going to do something Endgame related. I wonder if him and Johnny Gargano, like, had any chats.
Top 10 wrestler of all time, Bob. Top 10 wrestler of all time.
Bro.
Just get choked out in 2 seconds.
No doubt he's a top 10 wrestler of all time.
He's not.
It was tough to watch, and you were ugly about it afterwards. You were about it.
It's just,
you were laughing.
That was your worst take of all time.
I didn't like watching it. You know, I didn't. But I don't know. Maybe his ankle. He fucked
that
up his ankle on Monday Night Raw. Maybe his ankle wasn't good enough to do a whole match. It was
When we did the video after that match, I don't know if you caught it, but I called him Rey Mysterio Jr.
I did catch that. It felt like it was out of disrespect.
It wasn't out of disrespect. It was out of habit from, like,
from back in the day?
Yeah.
All right, then I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
After this, Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre had a match. This is when I feel like the crowd started to be like, all right, guys, we're getting tired. Let's start making these matches a little shorter.
Yeah.
This match, I honestly couldn't tell you a single thing about. It was kind of the most cookie-cutter, lackluster.
Right, I'll take it from here. So Roman Reigns comes back against Drew McIntyre. Two great stories on both sides. So you have Roman Reigns overcoming leukemia, Drew McIntyre overcoming 3MB, and then you have a situation where with Roman, did he come back too soon? It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it. I think it felt weird. The timing felt weird because, you know, all this talk about ratings and they're plummeting and this and that. And the Ambrose heel turn was terrible. And that was sort of at the forefront of the ratings plummet. And Roman's gone. Then he comes back, and then there's sort of just this forced storyline with Drew McIntyre. But you may not remember a single part of that match, but what I'll remember, after the match was over, I saw a Roman Reigns that I don't think any of us have ever seen before. Like, he's usually the badass. Sometimes he smiles, sometimes he cracks jokes. But this was a guy that, without saying a single word, just looked like he was thankful to be alive. Like, he was looking up at the sky.
He looked like he was crying in the turnbuckle for a bit.
Yeah, he went over to the turnbuckle. He was saying something to somebody. He was over, had his head down on the turnbuckle, was saying something. And then he hits the turnbuckle and acknowledges the crowd, and you just see him looking around, you know, like he was looking into the stands, and not for anybody in particular, but it was probably just one of those moments where it's like, fuck, like I'm just thankful that I'm alive.
Yeah, let me not take this for granted, probably.
Right, exactly. So, like, that's what stood out to me in that match. It had nothing to do with the match. It was more his reaction afterwards. So I'm glad he went over, and I'm glad that he had that moment.
New York booed him big time during his entrance. That music hit, and they booed him. Roman Reigns definitely had more pyro than anyone else on the show, too. That guy was... They were spewing out pyro for Roman Reigns like Jericho in the dirt. Who was it, Jericho, or was it Kevin Nash that had that ridiculous pyro set up in WCW? New York, never change, you know? As soon as we showed up, by the way, you got yelled 27 rings in your face within 2 seconds.
We had been on the premises for less than 30 seconds.
Yeah, we hopped out of the Uber. Someone was just like, 27! After this match, we got an all-time WrestleMania moment. We got an Elias concert.
It's
a little bit weird for a bit. Elias has like a kind of a setup where he's talking to himself on the Titantron, and he's like playing the piano in one, he's playing the drums in one, he's playing the guitar in one. And then he finally starts playing whatever his WrestleMania song was. And still, I don't really understand this, but a whole Babe Ruth calling his shot vignette plays?
I think it's because John Cena was trying to say, like, I'm the Babe Ruth of WWE.
That's fine. It was strangely long. I guess they wanted it to be like, who could it be? I pop huge, you pop huge, when we don't get Your Time Is Now hitting. We get Basic Thugonomics.
Yeah.
And we get the Doctor of Thugonomics, John Cena, PhD, coming out in a Babe Ruth jersey, in a backwards Yankee cap, and with the old school chain to basically just roast Elias via rap battle.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena versus Roan in a rap battle is now my all-time dream match.
I think we could probably make that happen.
I think Roan would probably body bag him, but the Doctor of Thugonomics you can never count out. He told Elias he's not going to hit him with the attitude adjustment. He's going to hit him with the FU. He did hit him with the FU. The place loved that. He called him a shih tzu. He called him a piece of shih tzu.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to get around calling someone a piece of shit. He had some good bars in there. He hasn't lost it.
He also verbally acknowledged a heel turn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He said Cena about to turn heel, which is the second time. There was that one time where he's like, you know, he like put his foot on the mat and he was like,
yeah,
look, it's a heel turn.
Rolling it. Yeah. But he also, like, that was the most cheered Cena I've ever.
He was universally cheered. Universally. Yes. There wasn't a single soul in that building booing him. Because everyone was just like, oh my god, the Doctor of Thugonomics. We have 2002 John Cena. Who would have ever expected this?
Right.
That was really cool. And then afterwards, oh boy, we had Triple H versus Batista in a no-holds-barred match. If Triple H lost, he was retired. We all knew he wasn't losing. And like nobody reacted to any of Batista's pinfalls as if it could have been the end of Triple H's career. I wish that stipulation wasn't on the match in the first place because it felt like it just told us the winner right away. This match was far and away, for me, the worst match on the card. It was a dreadful sit-through. I love Batista. I have nothing strongly against Triple H. He gives us NXT, so, you know, love him for that. I need Triple H to never wrestle again at WrestleMania.
This is a bad take, Bob.
It was so slow and plodding from the start. Batista tripped on his way into the ring, old Drax the Destroyer. Triple H has a Mad Max Fury Road entrance about 5 years too late. His entrance was like 5 minutes long. This match went like 25 minutes. They were selling like death at the beginning of it. They went into some weird deathmatch shit where Triple H was like going to cut off one of Batista's fingers, and then he ripped the nose ring out of his nose with pliers. It was fucking weird. The whole match was weird. They did 1,000 table bumps and the table didn't break, and then Triple H hit a spear through a table on Batista, and the finish was like they were dueling sledgehammers and Ric Flair gave Triple H one and he was like, go get him, and he just happened to get to Batista first. I don't know. I hated the whole thing.
I didn't hate it. I just was not super into it, and I wanted to be.
Felt like this killed the crowd for me.
Yeah, it went too long. I feel like that if there was going to be one of those just like high intensity banging out in, you know, 10, 15 minutes, it would have been that match, but it was literally the longest match on the card. Yeah, I kind of agree with you too about the stipulation giving it away. Although I wasn't 100% sure about it as you were. I mean, Triple H just gives his, you know, Hall of Fame speech the night before with DX. It would kind of make sense if this was like a weekend of, you know, this is it. I'm kind of, you know, I'm in the Hall of Fame. That was the other thing that I realized, though. Triple H has the potential to be a 5-time Hall of Famer.
Yeah, we discussed this. We watched the Hall of Fame together on Saturday night. And
so he would go in with DX, The Click, a singles wrestler, Evolution, and he fucking created NXT so he could go in as an executive as well. He would be a 5-time Hall of Famer.
God, I hope that happens. I would just love to see it happen because you know it would piss some people off. People would be like, he married the boss's daughter and whatever.
But he would absolutely deserve it.
I mean, if we're putting factions in, if we're putting the Click in, if we're putting DX in, eventually Evolution has to go in. Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame.
You want fucking Ric Flair to be able to have that moment.
That's true.
He'd be what? He'd be what, a 3-time Hall of Famer in that?
Yeah, he's singles and four horsemen right now.
Yeah, so he would go in with Evolution. And then you could have Triple H go in a 6-time with, what is it called? The 2-man power trip or something? Him and Stone Cold?
Oh, yeah. That would be unbelievable. We start putting in, like, random Raw tag teams like that. But this was, by the time this match finished up, it felt like it was, like, already 11. And the crowd was, we were pretty much ready to go home. I'm lying on a heating pad, cranked up to the highest setting right now because my back is just in shambles from sitting in a stadium seat for 7 hours. This is my main issue with your, not my issue with your point, but my main issue with this show. And overall, this is a net positive show for me. I'm a thumbs up on WrestleMania 35. I had a great time. You cannot put on a show this long ever again. You just can't do it. That's why I think the main event got the lackluster response it did. That's why, which we'll get into in just a sec. We're close. That's why I think the crowd was dead by the time this match started. But my God, you can never let this happen again. The show is so long. And at this point, you and I were looking at each other going, there's 3 matches left. You have to cut one of them, if not 2. They didn't cut either of them. They probably cut both of their time because Baron Corbin versus Kurt Angle went 6 minutes and Finn Balor versus Bobby Lashley went 4 minutes. Corbin and Angle, I enjoyed. I didn't think I would enjoy it all. Angle locks in an ankle lock at the very beginning of the match, and I was like, please, God, tap out. Please just make this a quick squash. I wound up enjoying the match. It didn't do a ton for me, but I was like, all right, that was good on both ends. Baron Corbin put up a good fight, but Kurt Angle put on a good last match, went for the moonsault. What we all found very weird is Baron Corbin went over. I guess, you know.
I didn't find that weird at all. I mean, like, if it's his last match, that's how you go out. You go out on your back. That's what everybody does.
I'm with you. On the other hand, it very much felt like this was the match for Kurt to go out on a high note. And it's also like it's Baron Corbin, which is.
Yes, that's why. The only reason why it was surprising was because it was Baron Corbin. If they
and it's like, is this really the guy we're going to put over in Kurt's farewell match?
If they had done the right thing, they would have put John Cena in that match, and they would have. No one would have been surprised with Kurt Angle going out on his back against John Cena, the guy that, you know, when Cena made his debut, it was in Kurt Angle's face. It was the start of the Ruthless Aggression era, yada, yada, yada. You know the story. But that would have made more sense. But having Baron Corbin just randomly in this match with Kurt Angle, it's like, okay, first of all, this is a mismatch, so maybe Kurt's just going to go over, get a nice little pop and send off. But, I mean, Baron Corbin going over didn't – like, I feel like that's one of those things. It's just like that's not going to really do anything for Baron Corbin in the long run because –
That's true, which is weird.
Him. Like, the moment was about Kurt Angle.
And Kurt even, like, got on the mic afterwards and he was like – yeah. I want to hear those two words that I love so much, so play my music. And 80,000 people paid the ultimate respect to him as he left by chanting, you suck.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, It wasn't like the,
Hysterical.
it wasn't like a it was a brutal match, and you know he hits the end of days.
Yeah, it was 6 minutes.
Catherine was out of the ring within 2 seconds, and then Kurt kind of just popped up and started making a speech.
I saw someone tweet, it made me laugh. I forget who it was, but they were like, did Kurt Angle really just lose his farewell match to someone dressed like a waiter? Up next, we had the Demon Finn Balor defeating Bobby Lashley in a, what was more or less a squash match. It was 4 minutes. Finn Balor got the upper hand the whole time, which I enjoyed. And
it
because
didn't feel like a squash match. It felt like a hurry the fuck up, it's almost midnight match.
Yeah, and the Demon should be overpowered over someone like Bobby Lashley. The Demon, you know, we've seen only a few times. When he's the Demon, it should be against people like Brock Lesnar or something like that, like huge names. Bobby Lashley, maybe not deserving of it, but it was cool to see the entrance at WrestleMania. He looked cool. I'm glad they didn't cut his match after he got all that makeup done, but at the time I was thinking, like, you gotta cut this match. Really, what I think a big solution would have been if you put one or two more matches on the pre-show and just rushed those, would have been a little better. Finally, we can speak on the main event. This is what everyone wants to hear, I think. Becky Lynch, the man, finally got her WrestleMania moment, and she defeated Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair in a winner-take-all triple threat match for the WWE Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships. We have differing opinions on this match.
I mean, there's the correct one, which is mine, and then there's the wrong one, which is yours.
So, during this match, as it started, it felt like the crowd was a little fatigued, but all kind of in, with the same attitude of like, all right, you know, we're tired, but we're going to get behind Becky right now, and we're going to cheer for her.
The tone was set right away, because, like, Becky didn't even get that crazy of a pop.
She kind of didn't, which was weird. But she got a good reception when they did the ring introductions. By the way, Charlotte did the Ric Flair Great American Bash 85 entrance. Weird being like the way they set it up, but kind of a cool homage to her dad. You know, drop it down in the helicopter. Obviously a pre-tape, but Joan Jett performed Ronda Rousey out to the ring, which was really cool. Joan Jett sounded awesome. This match starts off super stiff, super brutal.
Mm-hmm.
These chicks were laying everything in. Maybe the most stiff match of the night. And I got into it very quickly because of that. There was a few like cool Becky and Charlotte teaming up on Ronda things where they hit like that powerbomb thing on her, then Ronda caught Charlotte in the armbar on the ropes and Becky drop kicked her through the rope. She landed on the outside, pretty brutal. That's for me, I was very into the match at that point. Were you not?
I was waiting for the moment where it's like, okay, here we go. Like the in any big match, there is slow building.
We definitely got that, to your point, in Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan. I remember a moment in that match where maybe it was a little bit before Kofi kicked out of the running knee where we were like, okay, this is in high gear now. They just kicked this into high gear and they're stepping on the gas.
Right. And with this particular match, it was like, okay, they kind of just – they started hot right out of the gate. And I was just sort of waiting for that change of pace where in any big match, there's an indicator. It's like, all right, we're in the home stretch. And I never really felt like we got there. Like, it was almost like it started hot. It stayed hot. They bring out the table. And I mean, for the second time,
it kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah, the fucking table didn't break. And I was like, God damn it. And
I know. And they bring out the table and they set up the table. And it looks like we're going to get, they set it up in a very general, like, looked like a power bomb off the top rope through the table. Ronda throws the table, and they set up in the corner, and you and me looked at each other like, what the fuck?
It's not going
to
break.
Have we not learned that tables are not only very difficult to break in the corner, just in general, they always break, as you put it to me, in the bottom 10% of the table itself, the lower 10%.
Yep.
With the ladies, it's always harder to break tables. They have much lighter bodies. And we saw at Hell in a Cell, the first ever women's main event, Charlotte Flair versus Sasha Banks. They tried to break that table in the corner. 25 goddamn times. It didn't happen. It just didn't happen. So who in their right mind made the booking decision to put the table in the corner for the big table spot? Of course, it barely breaks. It gets some weird, like, boos from the crowd because we were all expecting a big table break. We didn't get it. And then it felt like as soon as the match was starting to kick into that high gear, it just ended. It very abruptly ended.
Which kind of is what happened in the Hell in a Cell match, now that I think of it.
It did, because she hit natural selection.
Yeah, just out of nowhere hits the natural selection, and then it was like 1, 2, 3. Everyone kind of looked at each other and like, really?
Yeah, so that was the weirdest thing, where Charlotte at some point gets thrown out of the ring. Charlotte put on a great performance in the main event, I thought. Her Spanish fly was great. A lot of her moves looked stiff. They came off great. I thought Charlotte put on a really good performance. But she gets thrown out of the ring. Ronda hits her kind of spin around. I don't even know what kind of slam it is. It's kind of like a spin around Samoan drop type thing. Into a crucifix that Becky just pinned her in. And Ronda Rousey clearly got her shoulders up during the pinfall, which is weird.
I could tell right away that it was fucking... it was botched, but...
yeah, I thought it was botched, but I didn't know the extent of it, where as of 3:33 a.m., the latest we've heard from a lot of credible sources is that this was not the finish at all. Ronda was meant to kick out, and her shoulders getting up was apparently a kick out. The match would continue for a little bit more, and then Becky Lynch would eventually tap Charlotte Flair out for the victory. That obviously didn't happen, making for Becky Lynch's massive main event WrestleMania moment to feel underwhelming. And we all were just like, oh, Becky wins. Fireworks.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
So that was the thing, was I give Becky all the credit in the world because, you know, you're talking about sports entertainment, which is predetermined. She knew that she was going to go over, but that wasn't the finish. And it's WrestleMania, and it's the main event, the first women's main event in WrestleMania history. And there's a big major fuck up at the end, but you're a performer, you're in the ring, and millions of people are watching this. You have to act surprised and excited and happy that you just won the fucking women's title, both of them. But in your head, as a human being, you're like, well, that wasn't supposed to fucking happen. And that the ending to the show just got ruined. But you have to, you know, put yourself in your character shoes and be like, holy shit, I just won the championship. And you have, it must be a nightmare. But either way, I mean, it would have been much better had the intended ending happened, because now you're talking about Charlotte was the intended person to tap to Becky, but it would have been nice if it were Ronda. It would have made more of a statement. Perhaps that was their approach to continue an angle, being like, yeah, like Ronda lost her title, but she never tapped, she never got pinned by Becky, so you can continue that, because that was the main feud, was between those two.
Yep.
But yeah, it was just disappointing. It doesn't ruin the night for me. Like you said, it's still an awesome WrestleMania. It still was a great time. There were a lot of really good matches on the card.
They tried to send the fans home happy. They really did. They did. Yeah. And the fans, I feel like, went home happy, but all with the sense of like, man, we wish that ended a little bit differently.
Right. It's almost like getting the best BJ of your entire life, and then right at the end, she bites your dick off. It's like, well,
I don't know about that.
And then, I mean, it's like still a great BJ. I had an awesome time.
I don't think they bit the dick off. I mean, it's like getting a good BJ and then like...
she pukes on your dick. It's like you still have your dick.
That still feels harsh. That still feels way harsh on the main event.
No, I think that's fair.
All right, I guess. Like, to your point, I want Becky Lynch to sign a book deal right now. Daniel Bryan signed his book deal right after he won the title at WrestleMania 30. I just want to hear Becky Lynch's side of the story and what went through her head when she pins Ronda Rousey 1, 2, 3 in the middle of that ring and is like, oh, fuck, I just won the titles.
Yeah.
That's about it for us, though. Final closing notes on the show. I guess we kind of touched on this. We both had a fun time. First WrestleMania together. It was a blast. I was happy to be there with you, pal. It's
is a great
we're
one.
both a bit delirious. I hear it in both of our voices right now. We're trailing on. We're going on. We're like just going in circles here.
Yeah.
We
It's
got to wrap this
3:40 in the
podcast
morning.
up. It's 3:40 in the morning. It took us
Well,
like 2 or 3 hours to get back to our apartments after Mania itself. Thank you for listening, everybody. And actually, I want to hear your favorite moments from WrestleMania.
my closing thought here, though, Bob,
All right, all right.
because we were talking about
Maybe I
when we,
wrapped up too early. We got a
yeah, we,
Carrabba's closing thought.
I got a closing thought.
You got a closing thought.
I got a closing thought.
You got one.
I got one right here.
Close this out, brother.
I gotta fucking close this thing out. Last episode, we talked about how we've kind of disconnected from wrestling, and sort of asked each other like, "What could bring you back?" And I had the answer to that, and it was Seth Rollins winning the Universal Championship.
Yeah.
A, having the title on TV every week,
That's the biggest thing for me.
that does big things for me. But just B, I'm interested in seeing what a babyface title run looks like for Seth Rollins and still having that Shield connection. I just think that he is not as a knock to him. So I'm not going to go and say he's significantly improved from the last title run with the Authority and Triple H, like aligning with Triple H. I'm not saying he sucked back then. I'm just saying I thought he was great back then and he's great now, but it's just a different, I just view him in a different light now that he's been around longer and he's had great matches and that's what I'm interested to see is before when he secedes from the Shield and he's the WWE champion, it's like, all right, we're seeing a guy who's been in the business for a long time, but this is really his true first run as a champion. I think he's much in a much better position to have like a very memorable title run, and I'm really looking forward to see how they book him.
I agree with that completely, and I hope the idea is him as the workhorse champion reminding fans how cool it is to have the title on Raw every week and just going out there and putting on phenomenal match after phenomenal match with a bunch of different contenders. I'm interested to see a bunch of different people challenge him for that title, and I would like to see him hold it for a long time.
Yeah.
That does it for the From the Top Rope WrestleMania recap. Thank you so much for listening to us two sleepy, delirious idiots discuss the grandest stage of them all, the show of shows. Until next time.
Wait, give it a grade.
Give it a grade. Give it a grade. We did this for our last WrestleMania show, which is on the From the Top Rope feed, and I don't remember what grades we gave that. I do think it was a better overall show than the last couple years of WrestleMania. Best show since 31 for me. I will give it a. In honor of Kofi Kingston, I'll give it a B plus.
Took the words right out of my mouth, so I'm going to go with an A minus now.
All right, fair.